How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I have joined so many of these anonymous groups. You know, they got anonymous for everything. I'm in about six of them. I'm in so many of them that everybody knows who I am. Yeah, I know it. I've joined that. The most recent one I joined was it was Procrastinators Anonymous. I joined that last year. Last year, I think it was. We haven't met yet. Very nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. Those are dad jokes. Glad to do them. The program is Look Back Friday. It's an idea I came up with some 10 years ago regarding taking previous calls and letting them run in an edited format, because Andrew always takes out my badinage at the beginning of the call, which I think is rather appealing, but apparently he doesn't. And the folks get straight to their question or their comment or the situation. Now, that said, obviously, in any call, there are many directions you can go in, there are many things you can say, and you have to try to focus on what is it that the person is either directly asking or implying. And if this were therapy, which it's not, we could go in all those directions, ask all kinds of questions, do some probing and exploring. But since we can't, I just try to offer a thought or two, something educationally helpful. And there are other things that could be addressed or said or are brought up in the call. Some of you might use a term, a psychological or diagnostic term that I don't have time to explain because we're focused on what the caller was asking primarily. And so I put those calls into the waiting list for future Look Back Fridays. And that is definitely how I get to them. All right, so we will get to those. And today with me is Eric Dumont, who is manning the boards. You could say manning. And the boards there at Ave Maria, who is together as a co-production with EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network. A good definition of frustration is the difference between the way we would like things to be, or let me extrapolate that, the way we would like another person to be, and the way they are. Now, the bigger the gap, the more our frustration. Many times, it is hard to change reality, or to change another person. If they don't want to be changed, or they don't see anything wrong, you're not going to do it. Not going to happen. So we change our expectations. We move them closer to the reality. If a person is a certain way, and that person is part of our lives, you know, you don't want to write them off. This isn't the mail person that you can ignore and wait until they drop off the mail, and then you go down and get it. This is your mother, or your mother-in-law, or your father, or your brother, or a parent. So given that, you have to get to a point where you put your expectations more in line with who they are. What do you expect? Now, that said, I was talking about that recently with Debbie Giorgiani on Take Two. We're talking about a book that I have just recently released called How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. And a caller called in after Debbie and I were talking a little bit and said,
Well, this makes it sound like you're a doormat. It makes it sound like you just have to shut up and accept mistreatment. I said, on the contrary. It doesn't mean because you don't respond or you ignore difficult comments or opinionated comments or even hurtful comments. It doesn't mean you're a doormat. Matter of fact, it means you're actually stronger. Because in the past, if you have tried to confront this or made an argument out of it, and clearly the other person doesn't want to hear this, they don't think they're doing anything at all problematic. In fact, it's you. You've tried that tack oftentimes, many times, and it's gotten nowhere. Worse than that, it's gotten ugly. So when you just start to accept the way a person is, you're not saying, okay, go ahead and mistreat me. Say all kinds of things that are going to hurt and be critical. You're not saying that. You're simply saying, if you do that, it's not going to get to me anywhere near as much as I let it get to me before. You don't have the power to make me feel a certain way. That's what it means to move your expectations closer to reality. It doesn't mean, okay, say whatever you want, do whatever you want. Well, wait a minute, Dr. Ray, that is what you're saying. No, you're not giving them permission to say it. You're saying if they say it, which you really can't stop, because that's pretty much the way they are in many contexts, then you're saying I'm not going to be disturbed by it to the degree that I have been in the past. I can't flip a switch and not let somebody's conduct or attitude or words not bother me. No, you can't. But you can work in that direction. Before, you were getting progressively more upset when they continued to act the way they are. It got to you more and more. Why? Well, underneath it all, because you want them to change. And as it became more and more clear they're not going to change, or they've been this way for 9 years, or 12 years, or 15 years, or 30 years, you haven't gotten to the point where you said, what do I expect? Expecting what has always been and what is now and what probably will continue to be, expecting that makes you less upset. It's when you don't want it to be that way. In effect, you demand that it not be that way. And the other person isn't budging. Come on. This is your mother, your mother-in-law, your dad-in-law. They've been doing this. Your mother makes these comments about your parenting constantly. She doesn't understand why you homeschool. She's got to make her remarks. Every chance she gets, she makes a remark, or she gets you an article that is anti-homeschooling. And you've tried to explain yourself many times. You've argued with her. To no avail. To no avail. She's not gonna budge on the way she looks at things. All right. When are you going to get to the point where her remarks just simply don't have the same impact? They don't get to you like they used to. They're old. And they're repetitive. And they're the same old, same old. That doesn't make you a doormat. It simply makes you someone who is not going to be distressed when another person doesn't act the way that you think they should. But they should act that way. Well, my response to that is at two levels. One, you're saying they should act that way. They don't think they should act that way. Or two, and this is the more important level, they are acting that way. We could get 100 people together who agree that they shouldn't act that way. But if they are acting that way, and they don't do anything about it, then there's nothing you can do. You can say they shouldn't until you are exhausted But the fact is, they are. So, putting your expectations closer to what has been or what is will make you less frustrated, less bothered, less distressed, less hurt, less offended. All the negative stuff that gets to you. Doesn't make you a doormat. Doesn't make you someone that can be walked all over. It simply means less and less are remarks or unpleasantries going to bother me like they used to or for as long as they used to. Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Hello, Steve Ray here. We're going to Normandy, France in November to celebrate the 80th anniversary of D-Day. We'll also be in Paris for the opening of the resurrected Notre Dame Cathedral. Join us on a pilgrimage of discovery through the saints and shrines of France. Catherine Laborier and the Miraculous Medal, St. Therese of Lisieux, the Incorrupt Body of Vincent de Paul, a dinner cruise through Paris on the Seine River, and so much more.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
That sound like the bumper music or the intro music of some guy who's a private eye, doesn't he? You know, you expect him to be leaping over a small car. Use a little red sports car. That's the kind of like what you have to have as accoutrement if you're going to be one of these private eye guys. And you also have to have a tough name. Magnum PI, Rockford Files. You know, you don't have Petunia is a name. You don't. And when you have to run, because you're in a big hurry to catch the bad guy, you run, you grab the car, and you leap over it. You don't even bother to open the door. Jump down into the seat. Of course, they probably got a stunt guy doing that for you. Can't do your own stunts. On this program, I do my own stunts. I do. I pronounce all the difficult words myself. And I'm willing to do all my disciplinary stunts, too. This is Look Back Friday. I got a number of calls up there. Let's see, we got, I'm looking at the clock there. Yeah, I can go for that longer one. Here's a problem when you have a grandparent who acts a certain way around your kids. And you've tried to get this grandparent to tone it down, but, you run into some resistance. So Dave from Nebraska is telling us about this.
I do hear you provide some counter and try to provoke some self-examination to the grandparents calling. And I know there's a lot of grandparents that have, you know, valid issues, but a lot of times it seems like it is taken at face value that, you know, the kid is obviously in the wrong, and I'm sure a lot of times they are.
Have you heard me do that?
I guess I've heard a couple calls in the past where they give limited information on...
That's it.
...on... And then you say, well, it sounds like, yeah, they kind of have just abandoned the faith. But in my experience, I still attend church regularly. Some of my siblings don't. And the hard part is seeing someone that goes to church a lot and is involved and is a complete hypocrite, and especially in your formative years. And I know you shouldn't, your faith shouldn't be dependent on anybody else's behavior. You know, it should be the faith itself. But I do think in my generation, a lot of people that grew up Catholic saw abhorrent behavior from their parents, just in the same way that it might be hard to, you know, look at the sex abuse scandal that drives people away. I think in the same way, seeing poor behavior by parents can also do the same thing.
Okay, let's jump in there, Dave.
Yeah.
Are you saying that you have either limited or ended contact with your parents?
I have in the past. When I had my first kid, it was a challenge because it kind of lights went off. I was like, oh my goodness, I would never treat my kid that way. And at that point, I was wrestling with how do I address, you know, my dad. He verbalizes how much he loves his kids, but did a lot of things very, very contrary to that. So wondering, I don't want to deprive him of a relationship with his kids. So trying to have conversations with him, you know, these are things that are concerning. And then of course he denies it, won't have that conversation at all, and then gives silent treatment for a long time.
Is that enough to separate from your dad?
No, in trying again, but trying to address behavior as it comes up, it's just tough because you don't want to necessarily. Like, I wouldn't put my kid in front of a rated R movie at, like, the age of 5, but, you know, that's a perpetual risk of being exposed to rated R material, so to speak.
Wait a minute. Now, I want to make sure I understand. So you're saying that your dad is a poor moral influence on your kids?
Yes.
And to the point where his language, his
language,
jokes?
Jokes, content, picking fights with people, topic selection, getting called, I mean, just monitoring. Basically, yeah. Would you put your kid around a random 17-year-old? Would you plop your kid down at a table of 17-year-olds?
And you've told him, you said, hey, Dad, I can't have you doing that around the kids. They're not adults. They don't understand this. We're trying to keep their innocence. I can't have you using that language, those kinds of jokes, those kinds of stories. Can you cool it when you're around the kids? And his attitude is, no, I am who I am. Accept it.
A little bit of both. We've had some where then it's good for a little while and then isn't. And we're in contact now, but there's an out with another sibling where they brought something up. And there's what happens is a lot of times, well, I can tell you don't like this. And then there's silent treatment for 6 months and then pretends like nothing happens, which... So that's another concern is the temporary silent treatment.
And then so wait a minute, he withdraws from you because when you try to get him to stop, he gets mad and he stays away from you.
Yeah.
All right, you're not doing it. He's doing it.
Yes, and then it can be a little bit of both, but sometimes a lot of times he's initiating that if you try to get the behavior. But then I have. Other siblings that they've withdrawn, and then he acts confused as to why they're withdrawing. It's kind of like a cycle. Someone's withdrawing from someone, and then...
How about your mom?
They're not married anymore.
Okay. All right. So when he does this, is he at your house or do you go to his?
He's at our house or in the community somewhere.
Okay. Because I say it's relatively easy if you're at his, you can say, hey, Dad, we're going to get gone. This is not something I want the kids to hear. That's easy enough. And maybe you can tell him, hey, Dad, I don't want to have no relationship with you, but I got to tell you, if you just don't respect what we're trying to keep the kids innocent from, then we're just going to visit you at your house. And if it happens, we're going to leave. Now, at which point, he'll get really, really mad, and he probably won't talk to you for a year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but you didn't do anything wrong. He put you in a corner. You said, Dad... I don't want to write you off. Dad, please. It's kind of like the parent who wants to babysit the kids and lets them watch every rot-gut movie their parents would never let them watch because their attitude is, you know, your parents are too strict. I'm going to give you the real cultural thing here. That grandparent
forces the parent to make a decision. So that seems like that's the situation you're in. If we were in therapy, I would get specifics. I'd want to know, what exactly does your dad say? What does he do? How does it come out? And how old are your kids? I just assumed that these kids were younger. These are not 14-year-olds. But, since obviously I couldn't do that, I'm forced to talk about this on a look back. It comes down to exactly what his dad is doing. When you cut contact with a parent, that's a big move. If you're not a Christian, it's not quite as big a move. Because you're not a Christian, you're not bound by the morals that you believe that Christ gave us and that God gave us. So if you cut them off, it's a social thing, and maybe there's fallout, but it's not quite the moral issue that it is for a Christian. That means that you got to be more specific about why you're doing it and what is it exactly. Now, in this case, it sounds like the siblings are also saying, Dad, you got to watch your behavior, and if you can't, we're not going to have you around the kids. Which I think is a fair thing to do. I think this is what Dad is doing. He goes into these 6 months period of silence, 6 month period of incognito, because he takes it personally. In other words, he hears Dave's decision, Dad, don't do this, around the kids, as saying, Dad, I don't accept who you are. I don't accept the way you act. Now, at one level, that's true. But it is not a slam on Dad personally. It's a slam on what Dad is doing and saying. But Dad takes it like, you're attacking me, your father. I am who I am, and you can't accept that. That's what he's doing, going into these protracted periods of withdrawal. Interestingly enough, from the grandkids, too. It isn't so much only that he's pulling back from Dave and his wife. He's pulling back from the grandkids, too. And so what it sounds like is they've got this reverberating relationship where, yeah, he comes around and he kind of watches himself for a little bit, and then his personality takes over and he slips back into his style that he knows Dave and his wife really don't appreciate among the kids, and then he leaves again. Now, there's an interesting thing that Dave said at the front, and initially, when I first heard it, I was going to chase it, but I let Dave talk longer, and then I realized he said he was essentially kind of criticizing me when I get these calls from grandparents who are saying I'm not allowed to see my grandkids. And, of course, I have to take at some level the face value what the grandparents are telling me. But Dave is saying, wait a minute, we young adults with young kids, we have reasons. Our parents are not always so innocent as they portray. That's what he was saying. And then he went into initially describing his dad's personality. He didn't like the way his dad was, even all the way back to childhood. Remember, he said that. He talked about, yeah, well, isn't it possible that this can reverberate all the way into your adulthood because you've been affected by this stuff? And so what he was saying was, I don't like my dad's personality, which is, again, what a lot of young adults do to parents when they write them off. I don't like your personality. I don't like your religion. I don't like your political views. But then he talked further, and he got into the old, what do you do when my dad acts rather worldly and immorally and coarsely around my kids, and he doesn't want to change it. Big screen streaming radio, high-definition radio here on The Doctor Is In. We use words like pulchritudinous and mellifluous and pugnacious and truculent. Psychopharmacological. That's a pretty high definition for the radio. Nice to have you here. This is Look Back Friday. Most of the time, this is the show on Friday. Sometimes we have the live show because there are folks that, for whatever the reason, can only call on a Friday. So we need to give them that chance. And I think that thought is accurate because we get a lot of calls when we do a live show.
Well, why don't you just do a live show all the time?
Well, no, because they're backing up. That's why we get a lot of calls. But this is where we take previous calls, and then we play them, and then I comment some more. And I'd like to think it's because I just want to be more helpful. I want to say things that might tap into benefits for people. But actually, the truth is, it's nowhere near that altruistic. I just want to say more. Comes right down to it. It's kind of a self-centered sort of motivation. Well, Dr. K is a very bright lady. She has called before. She calls from Illinois. She has an observation to make. She usually lends some very nice insights.
Well, I'm pretty good up here, and I'm feeling grateful for the life that I have. It's fabulous.
That's wonderful.
But I was thinking that the flip side of that coin is how to throw cold water on your feelings of gratitude, and that is to compare your life with others. I have a beautiful home. And I just went a couple of weeks ago, my cousin moved back to town, and I went to see her house, and I walked in, and I looked around, and my first selfish impulse was to say, I live in a doghouse, because her home is so beautiful. So that's just an example, and we do it all the time with our clothes, with our body shape, with who's dating whom, and who's friends with whom, and all of that. So, and it's just so unchristian, because we are given our own unique lives to live. And when we compare our lives with those of others, that's nothing but trouble.
Why do we do it?
Well, you know, there's that pesky old human self that sees and hears and wants, and the pride that I am comparing my life to your life. I'm comparing my house to her house because of pride. I want to have the better house.
I deserve it?
Oh, yeah, I do.
I'm getting shortchanged. I'm getting ripped off. I'm playing by the rules. I'm God. I'm a follower of God here.
That's not fair, God.
I noticed an interesting thing, Dr. K. We were talking about the tsunami some years back that killed a couple hundred thousand people. And I remember thinking at the time that I have had more people question God and his fairness when something happens to them personally, as opposed to when something of that magnitude would happen to 200,000 people. If it happens to me, where is God? If it happens to 200,000 people, wow, that's a shame. That's a tragedy.
Yes. If in our society, though, even if they care, they might not even question, where is God? Is there God? Is more the question of the day.
In the 1920s, G.K. Chesterton said, and Chesterton really is a clear-eyed social commentator, but I think he missed this one.
Yes.
He said, Americans are too smart to be fooled by the advertising blitz in saying, if you don't have this, you can be discontent. Or this is what you need to have a good self-image. or this is your status by having this. And he said, no. Americans won't fall for that. Well, we do. We did.
Oh, we do big time.
And I saw the number of advertisements that the average person is hit with in a year. It's thousands. Thousands and thousands and thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying, this is what you need to have contentment. This is how you should be valuable. All of that is tied into self-image as opposed to this product is good for you because it does this. Do you think part of it? That we just think that there's so much out there that we should have that if I don't and somebody else does, then I'm just getting ripped off. They've done surveys, kind of broad, international-type surveys. What countries are most content? The people. You would figure the countries that are called developed, countries like us, that have much material comforts. As a general rule now, I'm not across the board, of course, but for the most part, we are the wealthiest society the world has ever seen. We're among the least content. The countries that are among the most content are what we would call underdeveloped countries. Now, how is that? Well, it goes back to my opening monologue, where I said the gap between reality and our expectations, the bigger it is, the more frustrated we get. If we expect, if we want, if we should have a nice house or a newer car or better things, better opportunities, then we're going to be upset if it doesn't happen. And the irony is, it's hard to have a truly broad perspective. You know, Dr. K said, I saw my friend's house, and immediately I was poked with an attitude of, man, mine's not that nice. But if you look at it, I don't know Dr. K's house, but I got to believe that if you compare it to all the houses in all the world, it's probably in the top 10% in terms of air conditioning, in terms of room, in terms of weather safety, heat, running water, all those things. But we naturally do not and cannot look beyond what is staring us in the face. That house was staring her in the face. But she couldn't tell herself, okay, my house compared to that house isn't as materially nice, but my house compared to the rest of the world is quite nice. See, we don't do that. We don't do that. If you live to be a certain age, if you're 65 years old or you're 70 years old and you're bemoaning the loss of your skills or your youth, you don't naturally tell yourself how many people get to live to be 70. And in human history, very few live to be 70 proportionately. But we just naturally don't broaden out our perspective. And if we did, we wouldn't be bothered by what others around us have that looks to be more than ours. Emotionally peaking, all biorhythms in sync, aligned with Jupiter and Mars, pegging the IQ needle for short bursts at 127. Can't hold it there for more than a sentence or two, but if you're on the line when that sentence hits, you could get intellectually singed. Nice having you here. This is Look Back Friday. My compatriot there is Eric Dumont, who is running the boards and also directing me over to the proper previous call. Dan from Nebraska. Now, this is not necessarily all that unusual, but Dan from Nebraska is talking about he and his wife have different discipline styles.
My wife and I kind of have different I'm sure it's pretty common, but different parenting styles. And I kind of have a hard time seeing when the discipline isn't as important as I think it. Like, I think that there's no give. I feel like if I have a little give and I let him get away with stuff, then we're the ones in the restaurant causing everyone to leave. Like, it's kind of getting that way with our younger one, where he's able to just run around and scream, and I'm having a hard time kind of reeling him back in. Because
your wife's number one rationale is, oh, come on, he's just being a kid.
Yep, absolutely. There's an excuse for everything.
How old is he?
And she gives it to him. He's 4. The other one's 11.
Ooh, is the 11-year-old giving you trouble, too?
So the 11-year-old's more of the trouble. A 4-year-old, I still, he's good, and I talk quiet, and he understands. The 11-year-old has a hard time because kind of, he knows how to play us. You know, he's already learned that mom's easier, and that, you know, if he gets her coerced or convinces her, then she convinces me, and that's kind of how it works. But yeah, just certain things.
This has been going on for years, Dan. Dan, this has been going on for years. This isn't just you and your wife are disagreeing on how to handle a 4-year-old who's starting to push the limits. This is an 11-year-old who's been doing this for years.
Well, he hasn't been doing it as much up until recently with our second son. When things kind of got, you know.
Is it safe to say that on one hand, your wife views this as, well, come on, this is kids, you got to understand it, this is what they do, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, she gets frustrated with them.
Absolutely. Yeah, because she's exhausted at the end of the day, and I try to tell her that if you explain it and just tell them why they can't do it, then it's actually easier. And you don't have to chase them around everywhere, because otherwise you're just doing everything for them, and you're serving them, not them.
Have you asked her?
Yeah.
Okay, I hate to put it this way. This is bad, but let's give it a try. Have you asked her, what would I be allowed to do that you would view as proper discipline if I see this 11-year-old giving you grief?
We talk about the different methods and then agree upon discipline after the fact. Like, if he did something at school, we agree on stuff like that. And we see eye to eye on a lot of that. But it's more like stuff when he gets home from school and he had disciplined yesterday, you know, for acting up or for being rude to his mom. The following day, she lets him go out and play instead of doing his homework first, or, you know, like...
So why do you let him go out and play?
Just certain little...
Why do you let him go out and play?
Routine. You're not there. And I let him play.
Why do you do that?
Well, because I'm at work still.
So if you came home...
Yeah, I let him play, but after his work's done.
So if you came home and you found out that she relented on the discipline, would you be allowed to do anything about it? Would you be able to say, well, since you went out and played, you're going to have to go to bed early tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. And then she backs me up. I mean, you know, I feel like it's more like the confrontation that she has trouble with.
All right, let me give you three levels here.
To their face.
The first is house rules. Sit down and decide. Take the 5 main discipline problems. Disrespect, blowing off chores, mistreating a 4-year-old.
Yep.
Arguing, whatever. Pick the 5 or whatever you think are the most prominent and say, what's our house rule? Is he going to write 100 sentences every time he argues with you and gets disrespectful? Is that our house rule? Can you live with that? Is that okay? Get her to commit to that so you don't have to every time decide what you're going to do. Here's the rule. Here's the consequence. Here's what we're going to do. That's one. 2, my guess would be that she probably thinks that your discipline is too rough. And by that, I mean you get too loud or you get intimidating. In other words, she's uncomfortable with whatever it is about your manliness in your discipline. Am I wrong?
No.
We cut that off there because I just wanted to have somebody say I wasn't wrong. It would have meant a lot more if it was coming from a female. telling me I'm not wrong. So many comments to make on this. Two people with different personalities, which is pretty much most marriages, mean they have different styles. Some are more oblivious, some are more tolerant, some are more consistent, some are more emotional, some take behavior personally. There's just so many variables making up a personality that reflect on the way we raise kids, particularly the way we discipline them. So to expect two parents to be always on the same page regarding standards, regarding permission, regarding discipline, regarding consequences, you're kind of unrealistic. You want to be close. You want to have some kind of agreement. So, as I suggested to Dan, if he can get his wife to commit to saying, I can live with that rule, then he's got it on paper. Get it signed, get it notarized, and put it in the attorney's office. Okay, first thing. Second thing was the key thing that he said at the end of that call. She didn't like his style. Now, is his style nasty? Is it loud? Is it abrasive? Is it threatening? And a lot of times I hear this with guys. They will say, my wife thinks that my discipline is too strict. But what they're really saying is, my wife is uncomfortable with my discipline style. Sometimes the guys are as permissive as the wives are. They just yell about it more. I don't like him at age 4 roaming the restaurant when we're sitting at a table. At age 4, he's definitely capable of sitting at a table, and it's rude to the other people that we're allowing this to happen. So when he gets up, if Dad says, sit back down. You are not allowed to roam around. Just sit down. Now, to the degree that that happens every time they go out to eat, maybe the wife's thinking, yeah, well, okay, he doesn't want our son to do this, but again, didn't do anything about it. What would happen if when they went home, he said to the 4-year-old, I asked you to sit and you didn't. You're in the corner. Would wife be upset with that? If he didn't raise his voice, if he didn't yell, if he didn't threaten, just did it, would she be upset? That's the question. 3, and here's the main irony to all this. It happens so often. It happens in my office. Parents will come in and they'll talk about different discipline styles. I'm seeing more of the wife having the better standards, the dad being more oblivious. I'm seeing more and more of that. They have different styles. The parent with the more lax style, the more permissive, the more making excuses, for whatever the reason, just tolerating a lot of behavior that isn't good for the child or for the whole family. It's just not good. Doesn't teach character, doesn't teach self-control, doesn't teach responsibility. The parent who has the much looser style, and that's why I asked Dan what I did, gets frustrated. He said his wife's frustrated. But they don't connect the dots. They don't say, it's my loose style that is allowing this, and this is what's frustrating me because the child is running with it, which is what they'll do. Not a bad kid, it's just human nature. You let me do it, when I'm 11 years old, I'm going to do it. Maybe Dan could take advantage of that frustration. Honey, I don't want you to be frustrated. I don't want him ignoring you. I don't want him mistreating you. Make it something that is connected to the wife's exasperation. I want to step in and help out here. So, if he tones down his whole style, if he follows through, as I said, a lot of quote-unquote, stricter parents aren't stricter really, they're just louder, or they remind more, or they say do or don't more, but they don't back it up. And I've had that often in the office. I'll say, well, your wife may be more permissive, but you're just as permissive. The only thing is you just kind of louder about it, or you jump in quicker about it, but you don't really do all that much about it anyway. So it's just a different kind of permissive. And then the third thing is that he sits down and talks with her. What is it that you don't like about the way I discipline? Is it my standards? Do you have a resistance to me saying I don't want the four-year-old to run wild at the restaurant? Or is it you don't like the way I do it? Pin the wife down regarding her reasoning. What is it? I want to know. And if she says, well, I just think sometimes you're too rough. Okay. So if I'm not too rough, would you be okay with discipline that's stricter than yours? Well, that depends. Tell me, what's it depend upon? Well, sometimes I think you just don't allow them to be kids. All right. Would you tell me when I do that? Tell me when I don't allow them to be kids. Because what's happening here is that the wife in quote-unquote allowing them to be kids is not liking the way these kids are acting, especially the 11-year-old. 11-year-old's getting disrespectful with her and argumentative and resistant and defiant, and she doesn't like that. But for years, she's kind of allowed it. And this is just the natural outcome. I'm Dr. Ray.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
We are the pro-life generation, passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices, not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In, a co-production of EWTN Network Radio and Ave Maria Radio Communications out of Ann Arbor. With me today has been Eric Dumont. This is Look Back Friday, and as typical, we don't have enough time for another look back call. We didn't even after I went all the way past my soft break. So as I typically do, I'd like to quote something from C.S. Lewis, probably one of the great Christian apologists, not probably, one of the great Christian apologists in the 20th century. Get your centuries right, Raymond. He says this in Mere Christianity. A vague religion, all about feeling God in nature and so on, is so very attractive. It's all thrills and no work. Like watching the waves from the beach. But you will not get to Canada by studying the Atlantic. And you will not get eternal life simply by feeling the presence of God in flowers or in music. You see, what he's alluding to is the old, I'm spiritual, not religious. Try that with my wife. Honey, I'm marital. I'm marital, not committed. You know, let's not clutter up our marriage with, oh, I don't know, expectations and structure and good behavior and morality. Isn't it enough that I feel married to you? That I'm just spiritual, you know? There's something else out there beyond me, and I recognize that and I acknowledge it. But in terms of conducting my life for what that something out there might have had to say, well, wait a minute. That's religion. And religion waters down the maturity of my spirituality. You have to understand that. Biggest cop-out in the world. I'm spiritual but not religious. Make a good man along one of these days. I'm going to get to it. This is Dr. A. Thank you so much here for joining me on The Doctor's Inn on this Look Back Friday. Good Lord permit, and I'll see you Monday. Walk with God. And be spiritual and religious in your walk.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.